Cheers, guys, for listening, and welcome to 2024 and Season 2 of Aussie Beer Voyage. My name's Adzi. I'm pretty excited to get into this season, and I won't leave it too long, but we do want to just chat about what's going on this year. Previous years, we've just cut the audio from the video feed and put it onto our podcast. This year, we're doing things a little bit different, so the video feed will have all the video that we wanted to display cut down to about 25-30 minutes, but the audio has the full uncut version of every conversation that we really had over the day. So the episode series on YouTube this time, we'll go through, we talk about the system and the kit, whatever they've got, we go through a few beers, and then we sit down and have a chat about a couple of the career points that we're interested in. This time, we're back at Helios, talking to the new head brewer, Jake Harrison. It's pretty cool. We interviewed Charlie on the first episode last year, and geez, we were amateur, to say the least. I had questions on the phone, and then we were using the phone to record, and Charlie was answering questions before I got to ask him, because he didn't know what we had in our list, so we hope that we've gotten better, and we hope that you guys appreciate what we're trying to do. But anyway, we're enjoying it still, and we're going to keep doing it. So we're happy to also welcome on board our sponsors this year. Come back again, Bintani. They're the wholesale distributor offering a wide range of the world's highest quality ingredients for brewing and beverage and food manufacturing. Convoy also came back, cheers. Formed in 2019, Convoy is the leader in keg pooling across Australia, New Zealand, disrupting the beverage and hospitality industry. We've also got on board some new sponsors, Craft Punk's Canning. Craft Punk's mobile canning is a state-of-the-art packaging solution for craft brewers, cider makers, and artisanal beverage producers in southeast Queensland and northern New South Wales. And Rallings Labels and Stickers, you might have heard of them on Brews News, well, they're on our podcast as well. They're a leading provider of high-quality label stickers packaging products established in 1930, and they are excellent, and we love them all. So thanks to our sponsors, thanks to Jake, thanks to Helios. Let's just get into this episode and see how we go. Cheers. All right, man. Well, so this is your kit. We're on the brew deck here. What is it? I know what it is. I used to work here.
So we've got a two-vessel, 18 hectoliter, so 1,800 liter Premier stainless system. So this is a US-made kit. All manual valves, dual pumps, steam jacketed. So it's a beautiful system, really. One of the main sort of unique features of this kit is the mash lauter vessel is oversized, so sort of pretty much it's about 25 hec compared to like the 18 hec boil kettle whirlpool. So that really gives us a lot of scope to brew big beers easily. I guess the flip side challenge of having such a big lauter ton for us is if we want to down volume and brew a smaller volume or something and reduce our brew length, it makes it a challenge. But yeah, it's handy being able to stick best part of a ton of grain in that thing if we need to. So
yeah, nice. Have you ever pushed it?
Yeah. There was a couple of brews in 2023 where we pretty much got up near that ton mark.
Yeah,
Chris. So the chocolate brownie Imperial Pastry Stout was right up there. And Kronos 23 as well.
Yeah.
They were pretty similar size grists, those two. I think the brownie was really, I think I'd been at the brewery for maybe 4 or 5 months at that point. So that was sort of the first crack at really pushing this system.
See how it sort of goes.
I don't know. There's something fun about finding out where your limits are on a system. We definitely at my old gig at Ballistic, we pushed pretty hard.
Yeah.
A lot. It's good. It's good. And it's a very capable system. All manual. So there's not really much to go wrong, no pneumatic valves or anything like that, which can be a bit fiddly.
How do you find that coming from Ballistic?
Fine. Like, I love it. I mean, you're up and down the deck a bit more.
Yep.
The kit at Ballistic had a lot more automation, especially towards the end, whereas this is all very manual. We don't really have automation on this system at all. It keeps me honest.
Yeah.
I kind of like that brewing without a lot of automation. I think it's, you know, there's sort of a romance to that or just a sucker for punishment. I kind of prefer it. We're not a big production facility that's trying to pump out, you know, uber consistency and just brewing one or two products. Like for us, you know, having a kit like this sort of gives us a bit of flex and
makes it a bit easier too to know what you're doing. You can just visually see real quick which valve's open, which one's not?
Yeah, the beauty in this kit is in the simplicity. You know, like I've if I have a pump go down or something like that, the way the manifold is designed is everything can go everywhere.
Yeah.
So it gives you complete fluidity and a bit of a few options for being able to change things up if you have any issues on Brudo. Yeah. So that's pretty handy.
What's a trick you've learned? Have you learned something that's like you've gone, fuck yeah, this is great? This is a cool little trick that I've learned since being here on this kit.
Yeah. One of my favorites, actually, it's not so much a production trick, but it's in regarding CIP.
Yeah.
I think, like, as a sort of side note, like, learning how to CIP on a kit is sort of the way you learn to brew on a kit. And
yeah.
Any new brewers in breweries, often they get tasked with CIPing the brew house before they graduate up to being able to actually produce wort on it. So for this kit, I've found that I really like to CIP my heat exchanger whilst I'm CIPing my kettle and utilizing the steam jacket on the kettle to be able to heat my hex like right up to upper limit of its temp range, so that I can basically do like a, you know, 90 Celsius kind of hot caustic run
yep.
on my heat exchanger every single week at the end of the week. So I feel really comfortable that I don't have nasties lurking in my hex because it gets nuked every week.
Yeah.
You know, and there's such a bacteria trap in breweries and so many quality issues and cross-contam issues can tie back to something like a heat exchanger. So, you know, you could be imparting nasties into your wort before you've even pitched yeast, and a lot of breweries have learnt that the hard way over the years. So. I take it pretty seriously.
You got your mill over there, so it goes into your mill, your grist case.
Yeah.
Then comes all the way up and comes across.
Yeah.
You needed room for the forklift.
Yeah, excuse the mess, sorry.
But how much do you brew on your own? Like, are you running back and forth while you're milling?
Yeah, I prefer it, honestly. I prefer to mill and mash in at the same time, just because I find that going backwards and forwards, just by default, it forces me to mill at the pace that I kind of want to mill at.
Yeah.
I'm not milling too much, and this design is not ideal.
Yeah.
We'd be far better off having like an elevated gravity-fed grist case that went straight in. I wish we did, but this is what we've got. And so because it's multi-auger and it's a bit tricky, not running too hard is key. I find I'd rather mill in and have it take 5 or 10 minutes longer.
Yeah.
And do it myself and just be across everything.
Yep.
Scott loves to mill. It's like his sort of little passion thing. And I probably upset him a couple of times just wanting to be like, I just want to do it. But I don't know. I just find it. I seem to have less issues when I do it that way for some reason. So
it's part of brewing too, right? It's the
it's the start of the brew day. So there's something. I don't know. I like to brew alone. I find it sort of weirdly satisfying. So I don't mind. But you know, that kind of setup allows I could milled in the day before and then came in and just started mashing in. Like, you can do that too.
Mm.
I just find with this multi-auger setup that it's sort of prone to issues, so I try to keep it as stress-free as possible. And
it's a very long
auger,
isn't it, for what it has to do.
Eliminate as many risks and variables as possible.
Yeah.
It's fine, you know, chugs along.
How do you go with measuring, like, have you got all of that sorted, all your measurements, like getting your mash temps, all of that?
It's pretty hands-on. I don't have a lot of support, like, technologically. My flow meter at the moment is actually down on my mash tun, so that makes life a bit interesting. I have to crunch a few numbers and use sight glasses and things and just kind of do it that way. Which isn't ideal, but fixed, which is hopefully early this year. But, you know, that said, I mean, it's kind of just like in brewing like that's just like brewing on a massive homebrew system in a way. So it's not unfamiliar. Yep. But yeah, no, in terms of temps, it's probably more for this kit, I find the jacket on the mash lauder isn't connected to steam. So it's a challenge, you know, like you really got to be on top of your temps and strike water and manually adjusting your strike water tank temps on the fly to hit target mash temps when you're dealing with, you know, hundreds of kilos of malt and, you know, 1500 liters of water or something is pretty tricky. And there's no shortcuts, there's no easy ways, you just got to be pedantic and you gotta watch it like a hawk.
Yeah, just get it.
And then, like, once you've run 20 odd brews through the system, then you kind of know how it behaves and then it becomes a little bit, now I'm not so stressed when I mashed in, like early this time last year, I was sweating it because it was all a bit new and foreign, but now I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm generally within sort of half a degree of where I want to be.
Yep.
Even just doing it manually, so not such a big deal for limiteds and stuff. With the core, obviously, I try to be like super pedantic about it and get it as dialed in as possible just for consistency, but
And tank space, what have you got tank wise?
Because
when Scotty built this, he put in like a big ass HLT and CLT.
Yes, so this, like, we have a lot of capacity in such a small footprint, like. It's a blessing and a curse at the same time because, we've got two 18 hectolitre, conical uni tanks, and then we've got the three double size vessels, so the three 36 hect unis. As you said, like the oversized, the 36 hect cold liquor tank and hot liquor tank. Heaps of capacity for water and cooling, that's not an issue. We, Scott's installed a really ingenious patent pending, I don't know if it is actually patent pending, I can't back that up. An in-venue air conditioning system that utilizes our cold liquor at the end of the week. So, there's some cool little sustainable things inputted into that. We've also got the HLT connected to a massive solar hot water array on the roof, so can achieve sort of 90 degree temps, especially in summer.
Especially the last few weeks we've been having.
Yeah, straight off the roof. So very efficient, some really nice sustainable kind of workings to the brewery. So five fermenters, and then we've got two brights as well. So we've got a 36 and an 18, just over on that side of the cellar in the bar area. There's also another little four heck uni tank that I've just sort of got in the last couple of months, just for little muck around stuff.
Yep. You just run it off when you're doing something and...
Yeah, and looking to start experimenting with like new product development and things like that. So, we historically haven't had much of a pilot system, if at all, here at Helios. And it's something for me, like R&D is something I'm really passionate about. Yeah. And I would dearly love to be brewing, on a small little pilot kit every other week here and just mucking around.
A couple of kegs worth just to see what's going on.
Yeah, just to sort of fine tune and create and whatnot. That's sort of it for the major plant, and then a little bit of ancillary stuff, keg washers and steam boilers and all that other stuff, chillers and things. But it's a small space, it's not a big space at all, and there's a lot of volume, there's a lot of capacity in the facility, but we are limited by the amount of vessels we have. It is a bit of a dance trying to get, especially in this current market, I've been trying to push the brew length down so I can brew more often and keep product fresher and make limiteds a little bit more exclusive and things like that. So with this big oversized system, it keeps me on my toes to do that. I'm lucky. I've always brewed on Chinese equipment, so mucking around on a... American-made system's been great. It's been dope.
Nice. All Alrighty, so Jake's going to talk us through some of his most amazing beers that has come out, some of the core range and some that have come out this year. So what have we got first, man?
Yeah, I think probably a good place to start is Gaia Lemon Saison. So this is our last can release of 2023. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.
It's just a it's a bit of tongue-in-cheek, but like there's so much lemon drink. What's the word?
Hard solo.
Hard stuff, yeah. Yeah, like there's a lot of lemon RTD type drinks in the market at the moment that have been getting a fair bit of press.
Yep.
And I love Saison. I love lemon Saison. There's a couple of notable examples around the country that have been around for a while that just are really dependable. And it's, it was, for me, it was a limited that followed like a big oak cream double IPA we'll get to in a tick, but it just seemed like the right thing to do to go from oak cream double IPA back to a Saison to try and restore the balance in the world. And just a real summertime crusher. Mm. So, simplistic base.
Lemongrass, lemon myrtle, lemon drop hops.
No, just lemon, like crushed lemons, pureed lemon.
Right.
Yeah, like whole lemon. So you get a lot of that sort of pithiness.
Yep.
From the lemon, a lot of obviously lemon juice, a hint of sweetness from the lemon, just a very sort of traditional Belgian style saison base, nothing fancy, fermented at the cooler side just to keep esters and phenolics in check and really not have them kind of just bully the yard too much.
I really like at the end, it's still got that really nice saison peppery.
That
on the back of your tongue,
that white pepper note definitely comes through. Even with all, like, lemon's such a dominant flavor. There's also a fair bit of hop in this too, which is sort of hidden behind the yeast and the fruit profile, but a fair bit of Motueka and some Southern Cross Sub-Zero hop keef. And I think honestly the hop character in this beer is sort of like its unsung hero. If you're not looking for it, it's easy to miss it, but I think it adds so much back of palate and depth to the beer and complexity that, it's a sort of beer that, it's kind of a guilty admission, but it's the sort of beer that I just really wanted to drink this summer.
You're allowed to have those, mate.
So that's what this one was, and it was a good opportunity to sort of...
When you first take a whiff of it, hey, it's full lemon, but then once you get used to it and you've had it on the palate a bit, it's... That lemon takes almost a back seat, but it's still right there, just like I'm here while everything else is hanging around. It's really nice.
There's layers to it. The lemon is all the way through the palate, but it hasn't just kind of completely taken over. Just enough bitterness there to sort of keep things honest. That finish, you get a nice sort of pithiness from that lemon skin kind of character, without it sort of morphing into like astringency, which is always like the risk of those sorts of effects using that sort of stuff in beer. But I'm not really happy with
pairing?
It.
What would you put it with?
Oh, I think this would be excellent with, fish and seafood and stuff like that. It would just sing. I think the complementary character from the lemon and the yeast. Those kinds of beer, like Saison top style beers or wits and things like that work really well. Nice bright salads. I'm not a food pairing.
Me either.
Savant.
No, but, I'll drink anything with anything.
But I think, Jason, our brand ambassador, like as soon as he tasted that beer, he's just like, bam. He's like, I would like to have this with some grilled fish and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like he had sort of ideas around seafood, and it seems logical as well.
And imagine being in Belgium, working out in the field all day. Someone just brings out this to you like at lunchtime.
I had that at my home.
Working
in the field all day, definitely guilty of crushing a few of these over Christmas on a hot day, for sure. But that one's, we only launched that in December, so. It'll hang around, now that we're in that quiet period of the year. It was sort of destined to hang around through sort of January, February. you know, saisons are always a funny one.
With mate, I don't know why we don't drink more saisons in this sort of climate. I think it's the name maybe that confuses people.
I've definitely, beaten the drum a bit, trying to, like, get them out there a bit more. Yeah. And there's a bunch of other people I can think of locally. I think, you know, Ian Watson's probably the name that springs to mind immediately. He's an absolute guru on all things Belgian. Yeah, yeah.
I love his shirt, his Saison.
Yeah, the Metallica.
The Metallica.
It's dope. He's always talking along that similar line. There should be more of them.
Yeah.
But they just don't have as much mainstream commercial appeal.
Yeah.
And in part, that was one of the reasons why I released this beer in December, because it was like, look, it's not going to fly out the doors like Dionysus did, for example, but it's solid beer, it's seasonally appropriate, and I can drink it in summertime.
Amen to that. Excellent. Yeah. What have we got on the next one?
Next one's a bit of an old classic for Helios. It's Cyclops American IPA. So that's core range. This beer is, well, it's kind of goes all the way back, really.
I remember when it was Cyclops, when it was the single hop.
Yeah.
That's what it came from.
That's right. I've been playing around with this recipe a little bit. You know, this version's not as fresh as I would have liked, but it's just basically meant to be like a, you know, an easy drinking, like assertively bitter, but just solid 6% West Coast IPA. Like it's nothing fancy. It's just like a really just like bread and butter beer for modern craft breweries. And
I've drunk a lot of this beer.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, like this is one of the recipes I've been playing with a lot in the last 12 months. Just like subtle tweaks, and I've mucked around with the hops a little bit, and trying to sort of bring more of a fruit forward profile while still retaining like enough resin and kind of dank to sort of carry things. But you know, I think we can expect to see some more evolution of this beer and all the core beers for that matter over the next few months. So keep an eye out for that. There will be some changes, and I'm super pumped about it.
Yeah. I don't want to drink that one because I know what's coming. And so if I have too much of that one and then have some of these others, I'll be...
You got to preserve yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we can jump right into the next one if you can.
Oh, man, this whole beer, for me, I remember the old ones. And I love the way that you've taken this one to be like an oat cream. I've had this a couple of times. I actually did a... pairing with this one and with Hiker's Cloudscapes, as you know.
Yeah.
And they're both very different beers, but also very similar. But talk us through what you did with this one, because...
Yeah, this was...
Because this is a pretty big beer for Helios. Like, it's a...
It's been great, you know, like this beer sold out, cans sold out of this beer in, I think, 15 days or something for us. So it was pretty massive. This can has been salvaged from my secret stash, so don't get any ideas.
Joel, you will get some.
Yeah,
we'll give you some, Joel, don't worry.
I don't know. I guess for me personally, like oat creams and hazies, like I've brewed a lot of hazies in my career, but I've never really felt that I've kind of cracked the code, or I've never really engaged with the style. Well, at least not as much as other breweries have. And, I'm probably historically more drawn to things like Saison and stuff like that, personally. But for me, I think Dionysus just sort of seemed like the perfect kind of foundation to have a crack at something more in that kind of modern oat cream, kind of hypey space. And really try to iron out a few of the process issues that I was conscious of in my previous sort of... like endeavors down this road, and just try to iron out a few of the kinks that I think had held back beers like this that I've brewed in the past. So there was a raft of sort of technical process things that happened hot side and in ferment that ultimately really resulted in this beer coming out just super soft. There's the bitterness is very low, and there's just no like scratchy astringency hot burn. Like, it was really the goal was to try and achieve that, and it was really satisfying to sort of see the result and then see the public just kind of grab it and go nuts. So that was really cool. It was awesome to see it sort of catch a fire, and it's all gone now. So
next year is going to be the
I almost sort of feel obliged to probably, like, you know, don't be surprised if you see another hazy sneaking into our limited lineup sooner rather than later, because I'm kind of, you know, as much as it's not really my go-to style as a brewer or a consumer, I do like the challenges that they present technically. Yeah. Like, they're not easy beers to make, and there's some certain steps that if you don't do them well or you do them wrong,
well, there's that little bit of artwork in it, right, that you've had to work out how you want to build this beer and get it to where you want to, that you can work it, and then that skills and can also be applied to other beers.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I think in the months leading up to brewing this, I tasted a couple of really notable examples from other local breweries. Like, the one that comes to mind immediately was and I forget the name of the beer. Matt from Range just gave me like a clean skin 440 mil can like at the end of canning day one day when I rocked in there, and I think it was one of their collabs they did with Bracket, and it was a, you know, similar ABV oat cream, a little bit sweeter than I'd probably normally even gravitate towards. Like, I'm not really big on that lactose sweetness, but this beer was stunning. Like, it just blew my mind away. I just couldn't believe, like, the character, and so that was probably in the back of my mind putting this recipe together. Like, I did sip on a couple of tins of that Range Bracket collab, and I was sort of like trying to think about it a bit. So yeah, that was probably, you know, shout out Range and Bracket, because that beer kind of led to this in a way.
Yeah. Do you feel proud? Do you get that pride with that you?
Yeah, I kind of, you
what
know,
you wanted, and
yeah, I think that's probably the proudest aspect, is sort of having a goal and then realizing that goal. And now I feel a lot more confident to do these styles. Like, not that I, you know, it's not that I was ever not confident to do it
all the time,
but yeah, I feel like now I learn a lot making that beer, you know. So I definitely have refined my processes with these sorts of beers, and I feel like I could really lean into them now if needed.
So push the limit on a beer style you didn't know, and
it's a bit of, you know, sort of like everyone, you know, it's nice sort of stepping out of your comfort zone a little bit, but ultimately I feel like in my head I knew what I had to do for a while to sort of get these beers where in a better place, and I just had been probably a bit stubborn to go down that road, and this was the first time that I sort of incorporated all those things I'd been thinking about into one package, and I was like, oh shit, wow, okay, that worked.
You can do an Adam beer next.
Yeah, well, you never know.
You know. Here, they're popular.
They're making a comeback.
Actually, when this episode comes
DDH
out,
Adam
on the Gabs Day, because this is your Gabs push, right? Mm. Where this episode will come out the day after Gabs.
So we will have already won Gabs.
Hey, congratulations, bro.
Yeah, good. Oh, yeah.
Number one,
guaranteed.
Gabs.
It's an absolute shoo-in. So close, 101. On a serious note, like, I mean, if we were able to get into the, I don't even think it's, I mean, it's not impossible, but I think it's unlikely given our footprint.
Yep.
But I have been, you know, kind of humbled at how popular this beer's been.
It's been hyped up pretty well.
Yeah. So, you know, if it was to appear in the hottest 100 new beers, or you know, by some miracle in the
actual main hottest 100. I'll be surprised if it's not at least in the 100 new beers.
Yeah, I'd sort of hope so.
But even then, I reckon there's no reason why it couldn't get out there. I mean,
you never
as you said, it's all gone, man. Everyone drank it. Everyone's...
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people's Gabs list, and it's been in there.
Yeah, so you never know. Stranger things have happened. But, you know, for a little brewery like us to get anything in the top 100 is just a bit of a mountain to climb.
Yeah.
So, and it's not like we're pumping, you know, tens of thousands of dollars into marketing campaigns like probably every brewery in the top 20 is.
Yep.
Or top 50 is.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, for us to get to feature at all is a win.
Yep.
You know, like, it's not our main focus.
Man, the fact that you sold it in 2 weeks, as you said, that's a win.
Yeah.
That alone, you go, shit.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, Gabs 100 isn't our goal at all, but, yep. You know, it is nice to see people voting for it.
And yeah.
When it kind of was as popular as it was sort of seemed obvious to lean into it and push it a little bit and just see how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, nice. So,
you know, if you did vote for it, thanks. Yeah.
And if they're in the top 100, fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah. And what else have we got? The big boy.
Yeah. So this is last year's iteration of Kronos. Well, one of two iterations of this beer. So we did a stainless release, stainless only release, yep. Which was released in a 440ml can. This is the barrel aged version. So it's a blend of barrels, both rye whiskey and Jack Daniels.
Yep.
I don't actually know the origin of the rye whiskey barrels. There is no defining marks on there that I can discern. so I don't actually know where they came from, but they smelt great and they're in fabulous condition. So
yeah.
They were imported early last year from Barrel Brokers. We sourced a few barrels and...
I haven't even tasted this beer yet.
Haven't you?
I have the unbarreled one.
Oh, well, cheers to that.
But yeah, this is...
I don't know why I've got a full pot of it because I won't be driving anywhere for a week.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... big, a lot of I get like really defined like dark chocolate.
Yep.
There's like a raisiny sort of figgy kind of thing. There is like a obviously a nice vanilla-y note coming through from those American oak whiskey barrels, and a bit of spirit character, but not a heap, just complimentary. And also you're going to get a bit of that sort of mild like autolysis umami kind of character just from that extra oxidative kind of processes you get being in barrel in a subtropical climate. Unfortunately, we don't have access to like centrifuge or anything here. There's certain things that, like making these sorts of beers, I would love to have that sort of kit just to be able to clean things up that much more. But you know, this interpretation is pretty simple in its construction in terms of what tools we've got to use. So
yep.
It's big, complex.
Yeah.
It's really
like a coffee bitterness in there, like a super roasted coffee.
Very acrid. Like
yeah.
That's the one big difference between the stainless version, which we still have available. Like if you do get one of these, they're still available. Mm. Get one of each
you'd be mad not to get one of each.
And... I the stainless version was probably my beer of the year.
Mm.
And in many ways it kind of still is, but this one has that added depth and complexity that, you know, a barrel occupancy sort of has been able to impart, which has softened a lot of things. But yeah, there's a lot of just big acrid, like ashy roastiness up front. Mm. Like it's a very aggressive imperial stout, high ABV, like we're sort of north of 12%.
Yeah.
12.7 on this one. The stainless one was just slightly lower than that. But yeah, it's a winter warmer, so that's why we released it in December.
Are you keeping any aside for like awards or anything?
Yeah,
because like it'll obviously age well, right? Like you
definitely one to seller if you're interested in that. Like it's, you know, yes, we will keep a little bit aside. For some upcoming awards. I've got a little bit of the stainless one put aside too.
Mm.
It's kind of funny, I'll probably just be entering like stupid stouts, big stouts.
Yeah, they're all aged well, aren't they? all right, man, well, thanks for talking about these beers to us and sharing like some awesome information. Let's sit down, have a bit more of a chat. And
absolute pleasure, mate.
Yeah, drink some more beer.
Fabulous. I'm just going to sit on this. So keep me going all over.
I think so, me too. Yeah, yeah. Keep the flies out of it if that's possible. Mate, these Kronos are going to be our knockoff beers.
Shit, yeah.
Thanks for going through the taps with us.
My pleasure.
And some of these beers. This is going down great, like you and I. We've also let it warm up a little bit too. So it's
starting to open up now.
Yeah, it'll be fully open and tasting amazing soon. We're trying to keep the flies out because the flies are loving it because they're big dark beer and there's nothing worse than drinking a dark beer mouthful and feeling a freaking buzz going on in your in your beer. Some more about you, man. Like you and I haven't worked together, But incidentally, you're working where I used to and I'm working where you used to, which was super strange in itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, where did you start? It was Ballistic your first Bruin gig? Where did you come from? What got you into Bruin?
It was my first commercial gig. I think my journey probably starts a few years prior to that, when I got into home brewing. Sort of like dabbled with home brewing a little bit. My old man always home brewed sort of, you know, through my teenage years and stuff. So, you know, I was pretty accustomed to getting my hands on toolies of whatever from him. But yeah, like, I think my story is pretty similar to a lot of people that get into home brewing, and maybe it's a bit of that, like, trying to get cheap booze and just, I think I was sort of just getting into beer in general, and I've sort of stumbled into home brewing and started doing Kit and Kilo, and then went to Extract, and then, you know, Partial Mash, and then it was all grained pretty quickly. And just at that point kind of went down the rabbit hole for a few years and ended up, I was working in the environmental sector. I was like environmental scientist / town planner, and home brewing a lot. And I was probably just getting more and more interested in beer. And I signed up for, I applied to do the graduate certificate in brewing at Federation University in Ballarat. And I got accepted. So I started doing that while I was working full time. And then.
So you were living down there?
No, I was in Brisbane the whole time, just studying remotely. And then, the job at Ballistic, Lockie put that ad up mid-2017. This is probably, I think it was about 4 or 5 months after they opened.
Yep.
Things were getting a bit crazy for him to do it all on his own. And I kind of applied as a bit of a joke almost. I didn't think I really had a chance. Yeah. And then, he kind of called me up and we had a pretty funny chat. And he sort of almost tried to talk me out of it on the phone. And that was sort of it, you know, like it went from there and like started at Ballistic. And it was a very different Ballistic brewery back in those days. It was, it was just him and I for a few months. And then Ev, ironically, is here now too. Yep. He came on board in the brewery team and sort of went from there. It was a pretty rapid period of growth for us at Ballistic. And, you know, it kind of got crazy, you know, like it grew really, really quickly, which I guess had its issues in the end. But like, the experience of and everything we were able to achieve at Ballistic, I'm, immensely proud of, what I was able to do, but like what the team collectively, we were able to get done. It was... Yeah, there was a lot of things going on in that place for a long time. So it was good.
The you said one of the things that you're proud of that you did over there. One of them that doesn't get mentioned a lot is the bunker project. Yeah. The barrel aged sort of blending thing that was going on over there. That we're drinking one of your barrel aged beers here now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you haven't lost the love of the wood.
No.
Do you miss, probably not miss, I guess, because everyone would miss it, because you had that huge facility there, but do you wish that things did turn out different, that you had that ability to keep that going, because the constraints of the business obviously pulled you out of there because you were doing QA at Ballistic.
So my role at Ballistic changed a lot. I think I was there for... 5.5 years or so. From assistant brewer beginning to, I think within probably, 18 months, I was sort of a senior brewer in the team and, pretty quickly sort of was higher up in a growing team and in a more senior role and then took on, managing quality and also, starting bunker. Also while trying to do all the other stuff at the same time, it kind of got a bit crazy. But bunker definitely, to this day is like the coolest thing I've ever done in my career, hands down. Yeah. But it was also in a way like poison chalice is the wrong word, but wrong analogy. But it was at that point that bunker got off the ground. I think really when Ballistic was things were. There was too much going on. Yeah. Business was spread too thin, and myself, I was spread way too thin. So, it was a real battle for me to try and keep Bunker moving in a direction that kind of honoured what it was all about, and then try to manage quality in the midst of having issues with quality in the brewery and being understaffed and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, that, my role kind of got a bit chaotic, and I wasn't really able to be in any one place for the amount of time that I really should have been, which I think in many ways is probably why I decided to leave. You know, like I wasn't at Ballistic when things went into administration. I actually resigned a few months before that, which a lot of people rib me for. What did I know?
Exactly.
I didn't know anything. Like, I knew it wasn't great, but I didn't expect that to happen. But yeah, like, you know, I think we see it so often in businesses, and you know, like in the industry at the moment, it's been pretty hard for a while. And, you know, there was a period of kind of staff rollover then, Ballistic, like leading up to that thing happening. And it's really unfortunate for all considered.
Exactly.
There's no winners in that shit. But
no, we see our business certainly didn't walk in there and it was all happy days either. And it's still,
It's
still
a challenge,
an ongoing concern.
Big time, big time.
Well, it hasn't even been a year yet, so we're still finding our feet.
I think too, like, I don't know, I've had some pretty candid chats about this with people in private, not on a camera, but like in that, the lead up to all that stuff that happened, like me personally, like I probably had the worst year of my life, you know, like I lost my mum and I literally like went away and sort of dealt with that, or pretended that I dealt with that, and then, you know, just came back to work and sort of walked straight into a quality nightmare, and just stuff had happened. And I just think, like, mentally I wasn't in a good...
was getting recalled at that point.
There was a big recall that happened, which is just, you know, savage. And you know, ultimately, like, you know, there was mistakes that were made, and you know, me not being really there, like, I was away for a long time, but when I came back, I was just dealing with so much personal stuff that I probably didn't have my finger on the pulse either, and I probably missed some stuff that I should have picked up earlier, and whatever, there's, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but I think that all those things factored in, compiled, was like, I got to a point where when Charlie resigned here, and him and I caught up for a beer, and I was just like, mate, I just
want to do my own.
the prospect of just getting a brewery and being alone and just getting to do my own thing was very appealing. You know, I knew that there was going to be challenges here, and it wasn't all rainbows and unicorns, and, you know, money was tight, and it's almost made the challenge more rewarding in a way.
Because it mean, like, oh, we touched on it before when we were just chatting about, you know, tight money, like, it's industry wide, and it's not just brewers, it's bars, it's restaurants, it's cafes, like hospitality is just doing it tough. It's like, as I was saying, I've been in the industry 26 years now, and man, it's just, I've never seen it like this.
It's kind of unprecedented.
There's been downturns before, but it's never been like this, where you're just trying to scratch $2 together, just hoping that someone walks through your door and orders a beer and buys a four pack.
It's really tough, and it's, you know, it's going to go on for a while yet. So, like, you know, being efficient and trying to sharpen the pencil at every opportunity, and be creative and find different ways to generate revenue. It's all, you know.
What was your like, you would have been nervous a little bit, like, the first day on the kit, without Charlie as well, like, because I know he stuck around for a bit, didn't he, and pointed at some shit, but...
Yeah, our handover was about 30 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
So, I kind of just had to work it. But I knew where stuff was, and I knew how to turn things off and on, and that was about it. Yeah, it was all trial and error. I think the first beer I brewed, from memory, I think it was Pegasus. But yeah, I mean, like, we discussed earlier, like, that system's actually, it's a really lovely kit to brew on, and it does have some quirks, like every system, but it wasn't too bad, you know. I feel probably once I had 6 or 7 brews under my belt, I felt pretty comfortable on the kit, and now I feel like I'm kind of brewing with my eyes closed half the time.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of on autopilot a little bit.
Are you, Are you settled a little bit more mentally in that game as well? Like you're a bit more happy with that work-life balance?
Yeah, definitely. I think like ultimately, like in my previous role, what really became too much was I needed to be in multiple places at once, and yeah. And what I felt like was par wasn't even really achievable. So coming here and kind of pumping the brakes a bit and just going back to sort of, going back to basics and going back to first principles and like thinking about, all right, this isn't ballistic, this is Helios, this is a fundamentally different model.
Yeah.
Helios has had its struggles, like, well, what can I bring to the table here to help in this new chapter, Yeah, I'm not Charlie. I have maximum respect for the guy. He's a good mate. Hey, Charlie. But yeah, like,
ironically, was the first episode of our
first
podcast.
Yeah.
Very different, too. We were a bit newbie back then, too.
Mentioning that.
10 questions and.
Yeah.
But thankfully, we've gotten better.
It's been cool though, just to sort of be able to just kind of be all encompassed in this project. And admittedly, I don't have a barrel facility I can't make Brett Saisons and things like that. I've relished sort of the challenge and it's been good, I think, from just a professional, personal development sort of standpoint. I've definitely learned a lot.
If you could like get a piece of equipment, like maybe get rid of something here, if you had unlimited money and you could do what you wanted in here, well, not unlimited money, otherwise you'd build a bigger premises and have a huge air-conditioned tap room. if you could get rid of something maybe and put something in, or what would you do? Like what's something that you want, like a small fuge or?
Yeah, I think a centrifuge would be high on my list, just a little bubby one. So like a little GEA or something like that would be awesome, or Alfa Laval or something. That would be high. Like I think a piece of equipment like that offers so much from quality and stability improvement, so that's kind of a no-brainer. Some sort of downstream filtration, something like a fuge, or we really go bare bones here. We don't have a lot of fancy equipment at all. I think the other thing I would love to have is a massive cold room. Wouldn't that make a difference? Having a much more significant cold storage space would just really help with stock management. Currently here we're limited by the size of our cold room, which means that we are...
Got to go to external storage.
Yeah, relying on external cold storage, which comes with its own raft of problems and additional expense. And, with all the solar we produce on the roof here already, I think we could probably keep a nice refrigerated container pretty chilly for minimal expense. So that would probably be high on the list.
What about a canning line?
Canning line would be nice. Space is a massive issue, obviously, here. I'll tell you what I would like to do if I had unlimited money. What I would do is I would amend our existing development application and I would put in a massive beer garden and a cold room.
Yeah.
And then we could have a canning line and we could have all the things. So that's what I would do. I would change our currently onerous development conditions, Brisbane City Council, I'm talking to you, allow us to sort of work a little bit more efficiently. I think Helios really struggled through its approval process. Some of the conditions.
Some of the conditions on the license.
Onerous. And in hindsight too, like, I'm happy to say absolutely ridiculous, given the precedent that's been set by subsequent development applications. As a town planner in a former life, I think Helios really got the rough end of the stick. It's really kind of limited the ability of the business to grow.
Yeah.
And I think it's, that's something I'm pretty keen to, I would love to revisit.
Is that possible for you to do?
I think it is. It definitely is. It's going to take a, it's a long-term commitment.
Yeah.
That process would be onerous and it would be expensive. And given the existing opposition from certain people in council, it would be a process that would need to be, well thought out and planned, and there'd be a lot of consultation required. And so it's definitely something that's doable. It's just it's got to be. It's going to take some, long-term commitment and investment to sort of pull that off. And obviously, if we were going to go down that road, we'd need to have the capital investment anyway to facilitate
changes.
What changes would be sought. So it's all interconnected. So if anyone, if you got a sneaky couple of mil, like, get in touch. Let's chat. I'm actually serious, by the way.
What's the best thing about this venue that you love?
The thing I love most about this venue is the thing I dislike most about this venue is how compact it is. It's a blessing and a curse. So, like I think we mentioned earlier, like how much volume and capacity is like crammed into that cellar area and just the brewery in general. And then immediately opposite, we've got this little bar and the area upstairs. But I think again, it sort of flows in with it being in accordance with our approval conditions, but just being able to open things up and it's so compact that if we were able to open it up a bit more and get outside and bring the outside in a bit more, I think that would really make it a more enjoyable venue to visit.
It'd change the ambience totally.
There's definitely, I would love to, put big stack of doors in and stuff like that, so you can really just open it up during the day. I think that'd make a huge difference. Lots more windows and open air would make a big difference. And reduce the power bill as well. It's kind of what we're about. So.
Hell yeah. All right, man. Well, mate, thanks heaps for having us and wrapping up our first episode in 2024.
Happy to be here.
Been awesome to sit down and chat and catch up again. First time I reckon we've sat down in a while and had a few different beers.
Yeah. No, it's good. Thanks
it's been
for having
good.
Me.
No worries, man.
It's nice to get amongst it and hopefully I don't come across like a bumbling buffoon, but we'll...
You did all right, man.
Thank you. It's good. It's good. Hopefully, there we go. This is the this episode is sponsored by Flies and Imperial
Stout. That's right. Yeah. All right, guys. And so that's a wrap for this first episode. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, mate.
This episode sponsored by Craft Punks, Convoy, Bintani, and Rallings have come on board, and there might be a few others that we've got lined up in the coming few months. So cheers to them as well. Cheers to you. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, so Bunker was, it was a project that I was really fortunate to sort of lead and get given the reins to while I was at Ballistic. I was really kind of humbled that Lockie and, David and the other directors kind of were comfortable for me to do that. But, unfortunately, it all didn't really pan out with the way things went with Ballistic. But, it was an amazing opportunity in that to sort of, go through the full approvals process and project manager fit out and set up design and set up this fit for purpose mixed fermentation space, just a separate space a K up the road from the brewery dedicated to mixed culture fermentation, barrel aging, temperature controlled barrel room, some stainless as well, and it was super cool. There was so much potential for that project, but I guess, the overarching economic and market factors that sort of, led to the issues that Ballistic kind of had were, and the complexities that were happening on the ground real time at the company just made it very difficult to execute on that front. And I sort of, couldn't really be in multiple places at once. And so the project was kind of, by the time we were off the, getting it off the ground, it was already kind of getting, you know, I was being pulled in different directions, and it was, yeah, it was a big challenge. I think, like I sort of jokingly said, it was a bit like a poison chalice in that regard, because it was definitely like one of the most amazing things I've done in my brewing career, and some of my favorite beers as I brewed that I've ever brewed came out of that work, but yeah, it wasn't to be, you know. So yeah, live and learn.
Well, guys, thanks for listening. That was our first episode in 2024. Our next episode is going to be either with Craft Punks or Matic Beer. We're not sure which yet, but which one would you like to hear from first? Give us a shout out on our socials. Aussie Beer Voyage. I'm Adzy. Over and out. Cheers.